This is Science Friday. I'm John Dankosky. Ira Flatow is away, but he's back next week. It's a State of the Union staple, along with standing ovations, special guests, and statement outfits this year. Americans have come to expect proposals from their president about how he's going to improve their health. And this past Tuesday, President Trump made one.
My budget will ask Democrats and Republicans to make the needed commitment to eliminate the HIV epidemic in the United States within 10 years. We have made incredible strides. Incredible.
So stop the spread of HIV in the U.S. by 2030. That's the goal. But what would it take to make this happen? Here to talk about that and other selected short subjects in science is Washington Post science reporter Sarah Kaplan. Welcome to the show.
Thanks. Good to be here.
So Trump says he wants to eliminate HIV in the U.S. in 10 years. Any details about how this could happen?
So there's not a ton on strategy or cost. But what we do know is the ideas that the CDC and other agencies would focus on a few dozen U.S. counties that are responsible for more than half of all new HIV transmissions in the U.S. There's about 40,000 new cases every year and more than a million people in the U.S. living with HIV. And so the idea is if you can focus on these counties, give people access to the drugs needed to prevent infection, then you can actually lower transmission by a lot.
How have AIDS activists, public health folks, people have been watching this for a while, how have they responded?
So it sort of raised some eyebrows because, you know, obviously people are excited about this proposal, but at the same time, shortly after the president took office, he disbanded his HIV/AIDS Advisory Council, and he's also taken some policy positions that make it harder for the people most affected by these diseases to access treatment. He opposed Medicaid expansion, for example. And, you know, if you're a person who's a person of color or LGBT, you know, it might be harder to get treatment that way. So people are sort of confused about what exactly this means.
Well, any other science in this speech?
So there were a few other health subjects. The president talked about his ambition to reduce drug prices, fund childhood cancer, but significantly, there was no mention of a lot of other science subjects, including climate.
Including climate change. And there was a big news this week in climate change.
Yeah. So a day after the State of the Union, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration released new data showing that climate-induced natural disasters cost the U.S. nearly $100 billion last year and also 247 lives.
So that's an awful lot. It's a big, obviously, there's a lot of impact there. You've done some reporting in North Carolina. They've seen two big climate disasters in just the last couple of years. What are you learning there?
Yeah. So in southeast North Carolina, where I've been reporting, people had Hurricane Matthew in 2016 and then Florence last year. And this is, you know, in the course of 2 years, they've had two 500-year floods, so things that are supposedly have a 1 in 500 chance of happening. But now there's sort of this idea that we're facing a new normal. 2018 was the fourth warmest year on record, and all of the science suggests that severe natural disasters will become more frequent and more destructive as the climate continues to warm. They're happening twice as frequently as they used to. So, you know, people in Lumberton in North Carolina are sort of bracing themselves for the next thing.
And again, no real word from the top about what we're going to do about it.
Yeah.
Well, let's move on to another story we've been following this week. And this one, well, this is unusual. It's about our magnetic North Pole, and it's on the move. What's happening?
Yeah, so it's very bizarre. So the magnetic North Pole is different from the geographic North Pole, which is, you know, the top point of Earth's axis.
We know where that is.
We know where that is. It's not moving.
Okay.
But the magnetic North Pole is reflective of Earth's magnetic field, which is actually generated in Earth's interior. So at the very center in the core is this roiling, tumultuous ball of molten metal, and that conducts an electric current and generates this field. And the field fluctuates depending on what's happening in the core. And lately, it's been fluctuating really unpredictably at this accelerating pace. It's now moving more than 30 miles per year and sort of zipping towards Siberia. And scientists have to actually update, they had to have this emergency update to the World Magnetic Model, which they use to sort of mathematically predict where the pole should be, where a compass needle ought to be pointing. They had to have an update a year sooner than planned just because it's moving so fast.
But why is it moving so fast? What's happening?
So that's the big question, right? Like, clearly something is happening in Earth's interior, but we can't get down there. It's 2,000 miles beneath the surface. So the only thing to do is keep tracking Earth's pole and try to extrapolate from that, you know, what's happening beneath our feet.
And we're going to have more later this hour about how this whole thing works, and it's really fascinating. Very quickly, though, have we fixed our GPS systems? Because that all got messed up by the magnetic North Pole.
So actually, unless you're really close to the pole and trying to navigate very precisely, it wouldn't have affected you too much. But, you know, every day that the pole moved and the magnetic model didn't did create a little bit of discrepancy. So now, you know, cell phone GPS and military navigators can be pretty sure they're back on target.
And everything's back on target now because the government's not shut down and they can do all the stuff they need to do, right?
Yeah, absolutely. So actually, part of the reason that the magnetic model didn't get updated till this week was because the NOAA scientists who are supposed to host the model were not at work.
Okay, I'm going to have to end with a sad story with you here. NASA attempted CPR, so to speak, on its lovely little Mars rover. It's been doing such a great job. Opportunity. What is the status of Opportunity right now?
Yeah, so Opportunity got caught in this really dramatic dust storm on Mars actually last summer, and it hasn't been heard from since. And it's solar powered, so when dust blocks out the sun, that could be pretty problematic. But it's, you know, even if this is the end, it's a pretty noble way to go for a rover. Opportunity has been on Mars for more than 15 years, which is a record for any spacecraft on the surface of another world. And it's moved 29 miles, which is actually pretty far for a rover.
How far was it supposed to go? I mean, it was only supposed to go a couple thousand yards or something.
Yeah, it was only supposed to operate for 90 days. But instead, it's made all of these really amazing discoveries, and most important of which is that it has really found concrete, unambiguous evidence suggesting that Mars had liquid water on the surface early in its history. And that really changes our perception of what kind of world Mars used to be. It's really important in the search for life and trying to understand what happened to this planet to turn it into the kind of desolate desert we know today. So Opportunity's got a pretty good legacy, even if it does end soon.
And they're trying to reboot it, but they're not feeling confident that they'll be able to bring it back to life?
So yeah, there's like a couple more kind of last-ditch things that NASA's trying to do, including resetting Opportunity clock in hopes that maybe that will wake the rover back up, allow it to get back on schedule with the rising and setting of the sun over Mars. But every day that goes by and they don't hear from Opportunity, the chances get lower and lower, unfortunately.
I hear you have an obit already written.
I don't want to bury the robot too soon, but, you know, we try to be prepared for these things.
Oh, Sarah Kaplan, science reporter at The Washington Post, thank you so much for joining us. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.